Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this special council meeting, Tuesday, August 29th. I would like to call the meeting to order and acknowledge that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Is there anyone here for public input this morning? Anyone for public input? Hearing none, we will move down for the approval of the agenda as circulated. Moved by Councillor DeLong, seconded by Deputy Mayor Hubley. All those in favour? Councillor Moore?
Yes.
Councillor Greig?
Yes.
Motion is carried unanimously. The purpose of this meeting, and before we get going, I want to thank you for joining us here this morning. The municipality of the District of Lunenburg is developing new rules that will impact how development occurs along our coast. While we would have preferred for the province to have taken the lead through the adoption of the Coastal Protection Act and regulations, we are moving forward to develop our own Coastal Protection Land Use Bylaw. One of the primary goals of the Coastal Protection Land Use Bylaw is to require that construction which requires a building permit is located where it is less at risk from sea level rise, coastal flooding and erosion, while at the same time helping to ensure that development and construction do not occur where it can unnecessarily disrupt sensitive coastal ecosystems. All properties directly bordering either the ocean or along the LaHave River to the border with the town of Bridgewater are currently being considered within this project area. Today, staff are presenting the What We Heard report from the public engagement sessions on coastal protection. Today's presentation does not include proposed regulations. It is only the summary of the engagement. The regulations to be developed will be reviewed with council over the coming weeks and then be made available to the public for further consultation. The current timeline aims to have the regulations approved by the end of 2023. Staff will also be reviewing the Coastal Development's What We Heard report today. Like the Coastal Protection Project, staff will begin drafting recommendations on regulations that will go to Council for consideration and discussion for September. Draft regulations will then be drafted for further public engagement, and we will expect adoption by Council by the end of 2023. So at this time, Jacob, you're going to lead us through, and this is Jacob McPherson, and he is a Planner 1. So welcome.
Okay, awesome. I hope everybody's having a great morning. Is the mic coming?
Just one moment till we get the mic.
No,
okay, now try.
Hello.
Yeah.
Testing.
You're good.
Working? Great.
Yeah, it's a button to move the podium up.
Fancy. So, as the mayor mentioned, this is the What We Heard report talking about cluster development. So this is the document that we make after doing our public engagement in order to sort of reflect on and report back on what we heard through the public engagement process leading up to drafting some regulations for round two of public engagement.
Sorry about that. I think Jacob's mic is not working.
Maybe I could try using a different mic.
Just one moment.
Like really, really eat the mic? Oh, wow. It's not very sensitive.
Oh.
Okay, so we'll just mulligan that first shot. So,
can you hear now, Abhi?
Should be able to hear me now.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Abhi. Yes, so this is our What We Heard report on the topic of cluster development. So this is the document that we make in preparation for drafting regulations about cluster development. And just for anybody who's not familiar, a cluster development is when you have multiple units that are all in one lot and there is no subdivision, and thus you do not go through the usual subdivision regulations from that bylaw. Three-part agenda. We're going to start with talking about how we engaged, and then we're going to go on to what we actually heard, talking about our major themes, and then looking at the next steps in the process. So for the engagement process, we had a website. It had an FAQ and a survey on it, pretty straightforward. We had 698 engagement website visits while the website was up and active with the survey. There was 137 survey respondents, and 42% of those respondents lived near either a cluster development or one that is proposed to be built. We also had an open house right here in Cookeville, Best Western, and that had just over 69 open house attendants. It was very well attended, which we appreciate, of course. And looking at the major themes, here they are. We have road construction and access, the approval and regulation process, density, servicing and infrastructure, the effect of new cluster developments or new cluster development regulations on existing developments or projects that are in progress, as well as the environment, both in terms of the opportunities that this sort of development can provide, as well as potential drawbacks. Looking first at road construction and access, out of all of the survey respondents, 43% had extreme concern, whereas 35% were somewhat concerned about road construction or access. So overall, people are concerned about things like emergency vehicle access, turning radii, or the ability for people in a cluster development to escape during something like an evacuation. So overall, road standards were quite a large concern. And this was still also largely true for people who lived near a proposed or existing cluster development. Next up, we have approvals and regulations. And so part of the regulations that can be seen in a lot of other municipalities is that you have a trigger where after you have a certain number of units in your cluster development, there has to be some sort of approvals process, and that process might change depending on the characteristics of your site or your project, but in general, there is one number. And what we heard from both the open house and from the survey is that, you know, either the number or the approvals process itself should be very flexible. And so it depends on context, like how much land is available to develop, what is the capacity of that land, how many units are you looking to develop, what is the configuration of those units. Those were all things that people were interested in having play into a regulation process. In terms of the actual number of units before this process is triggered, as you can see here, 60% indicated other, which is quite a large number. And within those 60%, a good number of people mentioned that it should be dependent on the size of the lot, whereas other people had mentioned it should be somewhere between 2 and 3 units. But this may be thinking of a sort of different approvals process. During the open house, some had mentioned that a very low trigger could impede housing development, and so it sort of gets in the way of doing a development that may not have a notably large impact, but would have to go through an approvals process anyways. Talking about density, it was a mixed response in terms of the potential good and bad, sort of a balance. Cluster developments, due to the way that they're organized, you can actually have a higher level of density than a typical subdivision because you don't need lots necessarily to each have one house, or you can have homes grouped together. And in some formations of cluster developments, this is actually desirable. You have the sort of design where you group your homes together and then you have green space around. And so you might have something like a shared water or septic system. And this would create a higher level of density for that development. Some people were concerned that this might be able to disrupt the rural character of the area and that it might be far exceeding the existing level of density. Whereas some people noted that cluster developments actually provide a good level of variety in housing for modal because it provides higher density housing development or provides a different style of housing than is seen with a typical subdivision, and that this would be a good thing. As I mentioned, natural space conversion or conservation, and then the collective waste and water systems there. Moving on to servicing and infrastructure. One thing that people were concerned about was basically that sewer and water capacity, no matter what standards are in place, should be top of mind regardless of the approvals process itself. And so this concern was reflected in the survey, in which a majority of the respondents were either extremely concerned or very concerned about water quality and quantity, as well as sewage treatment for cluster developments. So a lot of people who were attendant in the open house were very interested in understanding how new regulations might affect in-progress development for things like cluster development. Specifically, there's interest in bare-land condos and this idea that you might have condominium corporation first, but no proposed development, and how this would all play into the actual structure itself. And so there was a perception that the current structure that we have with the cluster development regulations and the subdivision bylaws allow people to bypass certain standards rather than sort of making meaningful use of a cluster development model. And so this sort of raised questions about how new regulations would affect that, if they would be able to resolve those issues. Moving on to the environment, 96 out of 137 respondents to the survey were extremely concerned about the environmental impact of cluster development. So that's quite a high number. And specifically during the open house, we heard a lot of discussion about watershed areas and development in watershed areas. Others brought up the opportunity of a cluster development model as being able to conserve space. You may have heard of the conservation design, in which you have your homes grouped together and then you dedicate the rest of the space to natural amenity, things like trails, in order to sort of have a different style of development, as I had mentioned. So just to wrap up with our key takeaways, servicing and infrastructure, we heard very often, is front of mind. You want to make sure that these developments have the appropriate amount of capacity for the development itself. Regarding the actual standards themselves, they should be flexible based on the size of the lot, the characteristics of the site, and the arrangement of the development, as well as its size. And then the last concern that we heard very often was the effect that this might have on in-progress cluster development. And finishing off with our next steps, we're going to have staff presenting draft regulations to council this summer. And so now that we've sort of reported on what we've heard from the first round of public engagement, we will be doing that and then moving on to the second round of public engagement. And that's all from me. Happy to take any questions or comments. Thanks very much.
Questions? Councillor Oigle.
It's not necessarily a question, but I'm really glad to see the high number of the survey compared to other surveys that we have done in the past. That I really think that that's a really good number compared. You know, it would have been nice to have more, but I think that that was really good.
Yeah, for sure.
Any other comments, questions? If not, again, this is the what we heard report. This will come back in some draft regulations to council. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we will now move down to 4.1.2, what we heard, coastal protection. And we have Elizabeth Carr, who is the planner one as well, who's going to present on the coastal protection, what we heard.
Sorry about that. I'm just trying to figure this out here. I might have to, drag it Yep, there it is. Okay. There we go. We should be good. Yeah. All right. Oh, this is a weird one. Let me just see if that'll work. Okay, it does. All right. So good morning, everyone. My name is Liz, as the mayor mentioned, and I'm going to be presenting the results from the Coastal Protection Public Engagement. So this is just our agenda for my presentation today. I'm going to start off with how we engaged, then get into who we heard from, then, of course, what we heard, and I'll end off with our key takeaways and next steps. So for this public engagement initiative, we wanted to reach as many people as possible, which is why we used a variety of methods to both collect feedback and disseminate information. So these methods included a postcard that we sent out right at the beginning, I believe it was the first week of June, that just let residents know that we were starting public engagement. We also had a project page dedicated to the coastal protection on our engagement website, and it had a bunch of materials for the public to view, including fact sheets on uncommon terms, frequently asked questions, an expert interview series that was put together by both planning staff and local experts on climate change and ecosystem protection, as well as our survey and an interactive map that residents could add to. We also had our open house events where people could come and learn about coastal protection and ask any questions or express any concerns in person, and we held those throughout the municipality. When it comes to who we heard from, we had over 2,000 visits on the engagement site during the engagement period related to coastal protection. 369 people completed the survey, 240 people attended the open houses, and 42 people added to the online interactive map. And some stats that are important as we move through the findings of the survey include that 56% of survey respondents indicated that they own coastal property. And of that 56%, 84% indicated that their coastal property currently has a structure on it, whether that's a house or a cottage or something like that. And only 16% had vacant coastal property. So just keep those things in mind. I'll continue to indicate that as we go through the results. So based on the sign-up sheets that we had at our open houses, we determined that as many as 240 people attended the open houses, as I mentioned, which is an extremely positive turnout. And this table just shows a breakdown of roughly how many people attended each of the open house events. There was good turnout. Some had more than others. It was really good overall. Getting into what we heard, the initial scope of the coastal protection project included the topics of coastal flooding and sea level rise, coastal erosion and coastal ecosystems, as well as our objectives for the project of protecting people from coastal change and protecting the coast from damage caused by humans. And just a note, again, before we jump into the survey data, we did end up looking at responses from the collective, which was everyone that did the survey. But we also separated the responses for analysis based on people who own coastal property, as well as the type of coastal property, whether that's vacant or if it has a structure on it. So those differences in response will be discussed throughout this presentation. So starting with coastal flooding and sea level rise, 40% of all survey respondents indicated extreme concern, and 31% indicated that they were very concerned about coastal flooding. So there was overall a very high concern level for coastal flooding. Results were similar when we just looked at responses from people who own property on the coast. So that's both with structures and vacant properties. But we did find that responses were more varied for people who own vacant coastal properties. So the responses across the board tended to be more evenly distributed between the options rather than being higher on one end or the other. 47% of coastal property owners felt that their property is currently being impacted by coastal flooding caused by storms, hurricanes, and other extreme weather events. However, 80% of all survey respondents indicated that they think coastal flooding affects other properties within their community. So that was like an interesting comparison. People indicated the changes they were noticing in their communities related to coastal flooding include roads flooding more regularly, especially after big storms, development encroaching on the coast, reduction in natural buffers to sea level rise and storm surge, and boardwalks being damaged more frequently.
For clarification on this particular one, so their own property, is your property currently being impacted by coastal flooding? 47, percent said yes, but do you believe coastal? So these were other properties within that area, correct? That 80% said, do you believe coastal flooding impacts other properties in your community? So
yes.
It didn't impact theirs, but they felt it impacted other people.
Correct, yeah. Okay. So the first one had to do just with coastal property owners because they were, I think they were able to answer that question of whether they believed their property was affected. And then, out of everyone, 80% had noticed coastal flooding in their community. Okay. So that included both coastal property owners and non-coastal property owners. At each of the open houses, large printed maps were provided for members of the public to identify areas that they have noticed coastal flooding and erosion, as well as areas with coastal ecosystems such as wetlands, beaches, and dunes. All of the points from the print maps, as well as the points from the online interactive map, were combined to create the maps that you will see throughout this presentation. And this is the map showing areas people have noticed coastal flooding. And the areas with the most dots on this particular map include the Lehave River and the communities of Blue Rocks, Broad Cove, Cherry Hill, Corcoran's Island, Dublin Shore, and Petite Riviere. I'll just pause on that one for a second if people want to look. So a common theme throughout the public engagement for coastal protection was the desire for realistic regulations. When it comes to the level of protection people desired for coastal flooding, the majority of survey respondents indicated the need for moderate to high protection. Again, the responses from coastal property owners were kind of similar to the collective of responses. And the graph on the right is a comparison of the responses from all respondents, as well as waterfront property owners that have structures on their property and vacant property owners. So you can kind of see where the vacant property owners had more even distribution. The responses from those with structures were notably different. On average, those with vacant properties indicated that they wanted less strict regulations. Staff outlined methods of protection for coastal flooding, including vertical and horizontal setbacks, and many people indicated support for setbacks. However, feedback we received included concern about the future development potential of some coastal properties and the effect that setbacks will have on insurance coverage or rates. Other respondents thought that current regulations were already sufficient or were too strict. So we have a couple quotes there that were pulled from the survey. We had a couple open-ended questions right at the end. You'll see those throughout the presentation as well as the report if you had a chance to look at it. There was a lot of support for setbacks, but we did receive commentary about how it would affect people who haven't developed their property yet. So now jumping into coastal erosion. 38% of all survey respondents indicated extreme concern, and 32% indicated they were very concerned about coastal erosion. Like coastal flooding, results were similar to the collective when we looked at responses from people who own property on the coast. Responses were again more varied for people who own coastal property without an existing structure or vacant property. 42% of coastal property owners indicated that their property is currently experiencing coastal erosion. And 85% of all respondents, again, indicated that they believe erosion impacts other properties within their community. People mentioned that changes they are noticing in their communities related to coastal erosion include eroded vegetation along shorelines, and as well as changing landscapes, erosion near shoreline development, rocks being pushed back on beaches and damage to roads, and more rock wall installations along the coast. This map shows areas that residents identified as prone to coastal erosion, and communities with the most points included Big Tank Cook Island, Green Bay, Dublin Shore, Kingsburg, Lower Lehave, and Broad Cove. Uh, 66% of all survey respondents believe that current regulations do not provide adequate protection from coastal erosion. When asked about the appropriate level of protection, 52% of all survey respondents indicated the need for high protections, with 25% selecting moderate protections. And results from all coastal property owners varied slightly, but were overall similar to the collective response to this question. And again, when looking at responses from coastal property owners with vacant property, results were more evenly distributed among the options, which is shown in the graph on the right. One of the questions asked in the survey was about the types of barriers property owners could use to help combat erosion. So those are barriers along the coast specifically. And when asked which type of barrier was best, out of a soft barrier, which is made up of vegetation typically, a hard barrier like a rock wall or like shoreline armoring, a combination of both or another alternative, 46%, oh my goodness, sorry. 46% said a combination of soft and hard barriers was best, and 36% indicated that just soft barriers were best, and 7% said a hard barrier was best. We also asked people what might influence coastal property owners to implement a hard barrier over a hard barrier like a seawall over a soft barrier like a living shoreline on their property, and the top responses were a lack of education and awareness about the benefits of living shorelines, the perception that living shorelines are more expensive to implement or and that there aren't many funding opportunities for them, as well as the perception that living shorelines are not as effective at slowing erosion as hard barriers. Can we have questions throughout?
Oh, sorry, I didn't see you. Councillor Vino.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
The other is fairly high in this question compared to the other at 11%. Did we have any suggestions of what the other options were, or did people comment on what that could look like?
A lot of people kind of comment, like the other option for most of these questions, people didn't often like include like another option. They would kind of provide justification for their choice. So a lot of people in that box said like soft barriers and then explained why they wanted soft barriers. So yeah, a lot of those were kind of could almost be lumped in with the top three options. There wasn't a lot of variation, I guess. Yeah. All right. The question about the level of protection required when regulating the types of barriers that can be used along the shore had a more varied response than other questions about the level of protection. So 41% indicated a desire for high protections when regulating shoreline armoring and protection. 27% selected moderate protection, and 23% selected some protection, and 9 said no new regulations.
Councillor Haysom, can you put your mic on?
I'm so sorry to just... is that specific to shoreline armoring?
Correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
So now we're going to jump into coastal ecosystems. 57% of all survey respondents indicated extreme concern, and 24% indicated they were very concerned about losing environmental features such as beaches, dunes, and wetlands. Responses were similar to the collective among those that own coastal property, and responses were, again, a bit more varied for people who own coastal property without an existing home or structure on it. When asked about their understanding of the benefits associated with coastal ecosystems, 85% of all responses indicated between a moderate and high understanding, with 84% of survey responses ranking protecting areas deemed ecologically sensitive as highly important. People indicated that changes they were noticing in their communities related to coastal ecosystems included sand loss and erosion, wetlands flooding, and development disturbing sand dunes and wetlands. And this map shows areas that within Modal that residents identified as being ecologically sensitive or significant within their community. And the different colored stars represent beaches, dunes, and wetlands. Wetlands were identified in the areas of Crescent Beach, Green Bay, Broad Cove, Cherry Hill, and Cape Bay Beach. Dunes appeared to be clustered in the communities of Green Bay, Crescent Beach, Hurdles Beach, Cherry Hill. There were several other ones that were named as well, mostly beach communities. And beaches were distributed across Modal's coastline, which was unsurprising, but the most pins were placed on Cherry Hill, Green Bay, and Hurdles Beach. Sixty-six percent of all survey respondents indicated the desire for high protections for coastal ecosystems, with 18% selecting moderate protections, and 9% with some protections. Again, responses from coastal property owners closely mirrored those of the collective response to the question, with a slight variation for vacant property owners. And it is worth noting that during engagement, we saw a lot of passion for protecting coastal ecosystems from residents, and that is echoed within the survey results. So now we're going to move into the topics that emerged from engagement. So these weren't part of the original scope of the project, but we saw enough that we decided to mention them as well here at the end. And those topics include collaboration between levels of government, public access to the coast, and RV parks and campgrounds. So starting with collaboration among governments, many residents commented on the need for intergovernment collaboration. Some people mentioned that higher levels of government often have access to more experts in more fields than local government, and it was suggested that creating evidence-based regulations with the help of experts would result in rules that are more reliable and free of loopholes. Others called for Modal to ask for a moratorium on coastal development, and some called for Modal to demand that the province implement the Coastal Protection Act regulations. Public access to the coast is the next one. So many people indicated that their biggest concern about coastal development is that access to the coast would be further limited or inhibited. And there were also a lot of questions from residents about government jurisdiction when it comes to ensuring access to the coast. So this is just six quotes out of many people were concerned about public access to the coast. And yeah, I think it's kind of a learning opportunity for the jurisdiction for levels of government.
Councillor Oigle.
I wasn't finished reading, sorry.
No but worries. That is in.
Thank you.
And the last one was RV parks and campgrounds. So a repeated concern from residents centered around RV parks. We know that there is a history of conflict related to RV parks and Modal, but staff conveyed to residents during engagement that RV parks would be addressed through the wider Modal 2040 project that's coming in the next couple of years. So now I'll get into the key takeaways from engagement. So the first one was moderate and high-level protection desired. So though there were some differences when it came to property owners on and off the coast, as well as those with coastal properties with structures versus vacant properties, the majority responses were positive when it came to wanting to protect against flooding, erosion, and the loss of coastal ecosystems, as well as the desired level of protections, which was mostly moderate to high. The second one is support for different types of regulations. So people are generally supportive of horizontal and vertical setbacks, as well as a method for combating flooding and erosion. Number three was protecting ecosystems is highly valued. People are very passionate about coastal ecosystems specifically. They recognize the ecological significance of things like wetlands, beaches, and dunes, and they want to protect them into the future. Number four was education and awareness is desired. People want to learn more about both hard and soft barriers for combating erosion, and specifically why hard barriers can be damaging and how to implement living shorelines on their properties, as well as about generally how climate change can affect them in the future. And we want to continue providing educational materials and events for residents so they can be informed on all of these issues and others related to both coastal protection and other aspects of the Modal 2040 project. And it's a good way to continue the conversation and is important for any type of regulation being developed. The last one was strong interest in widespread land use planning issues. So there was a strong interest in other planning issues such as RV parks, inland flooding, and access to the coast and water. And these are topics we should expect to hear more about as we continue with the Modal 2040 project. So this shows a timeline similar to the one Jacob showed. So we've finished with our initial public engagement. We've now written and presented the What We Heard report to Council, and we're currently working on drafting regulations or recommendations for regulations. So staff will present those draft recommendations to Council, and we'll go into more public engagement for those in the future. And then we will revise and finally get approval for these regulations by the end of 2023. And that's everything I have for you today.
Questions? Deputy Mayor Hubley.
Just a quick one. When the total respondents of 369, excuse me, how many of those are coastal property owners? A percentage of the number doesn't tell me exactly how many.
So if I was to, it would be just shy of 200 people.
Were property owners?
Yeah, awesome. Are coastal property owners, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hazel.
Thank you. And piggybacking on that question, if approximately 200 are property owners, how many of those would be vacant?
It was about 16%, so let's say my mental math here, trying to figure that out. I don't know.
32.
It was about, 32, 33.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I want to add something to that. The vacant property owners question, we did discuss that quite a bit because it's a fairly low number, and it's so low that we didn't want to necessarily portray that being, it's almost insignificant in terms of whether it's representative of that group, because it's quite a low number. So we didn't try to treat it the same as all the other groups, because it's such a low number that it doesn't necessarily, it's not very representative of vacant property owners. So yeah, I think it was like 33, yeah. I think was the total number of owners yeah. that we heard from.
Okay. Further questions? Councillor Statton.
Thank you, if I might. The province is reluctant to pass the Coastal Protection Act. So we're doing our own regulations. And I'm just wondering what level of expertise we have on staff when these regulations are drawn up to make sure they're within the Environmental Protection Act, or how do we enforce them once we put them in place? Do we have the staff on site to enforce, or do we need to go to outside help for that?
Whatever the approach would be and when it comes to regulations would typically be reliant on either kind of straightforward regulations that are involved, whether it's a certain setback requirement, which is fairly straightforward in terms of how a development officer is reviewing things. But when it comes to things like, say, elevation requirements, or if somebody is doing a study, would you be relying on the landowner to do a certain study or have a surveyor provide information? So they're doing the reports, they're engaging with experts, and they're providing us with that. So we would be relying on the fact that an engineer or a surveyor has used their professional credentials to submit that. So we don't require to have that in-house, and it would be on the landowner to engage those people.
Thank you.
So just piggybacking on that, and that would determine whether or not they had a building permit issued to them, if they were able to adhere to
that's correct, yeah.
That development agreement.
What would unfold would be a development permit process for these
yes.
properties, where that's the opportunity for the development officer to review these, make sure they're in conformity with the new rules. If they are or they aren't, then there might be a requirement to have some type of professional to provide something.
So from a municipal perspective, it would be the ability to obtain a building permit and be able to proceed with that development. Councillor Haysom.
Thank you. I have a question about hard and soft barriers, and I know that we've talked about this, how likely that doesn't fall under municipal jurisdiction. The other thing that's come up, I suppose, is this issue of collaboration between levels of government. And is there a mechanism by which the municipality can encourage one type of barrier over another, or require that the permitting agency, which I assume would be Environment or possibly DFO, depending on where that waterway is, could the municipality make a request about the type of barrier that's used? Is that a possibility? Do we know?
I can try to answer that. It depends where it is. There's a lot of governments involved at the coastline, of course, as you know. But essentially, DNR with the province is involved with approving things like shoreline protection that impedes into Crown land. When it comes to shoreline protection that's entirely within a person's property, there's not a permit process involved with that. I think one of the important things that we found from the survey was that there was a high kind of interest in seeing, or I should say, people indicated that one of the main reasons they saw as people not doing things like green shores or alternatives to kind of hardened shorelines was the lack of information and education. People didn't know about it. And so there is a lot of opportunity there to kind of provide more information and resources to people to promote that. And I think if you're looking at what are the best ways to have some influence on that, I think as we've looked at that topic, the education and awareness is probably the best way to help with that issue.
Just to follow up on that, is there an opportunity for an incentive somehow from the municipality if someone chooses to do a soft barrier versus a hard barrier? Or is that something that, again, that we would have a mechanism to do?
I think anything's possible, whether it's different programs, like municipalities have different types of grants or different programs like that. So that's always stuff that can be looked at for sure.
And again, that would depend on the, I guess, what type of shoreline you have to start with, whether you're in Blue Rocks or Crescent Beach.
Definitely. That's where that education piece comes in, yes. Because if they know what they have, then they can kind of make a decision on what they think is best for them.
Yeah. I don't think it is one standard. Again, it goes back to we have quite a diverse shoreline with sediments. So, any further questions? Councillor DeLong.
I have more of a comment. Given that one of the things we heard from respondents is that they want to see more collaboration between levels of government on coastal protection, the indefinite delay by the province on coastal protection that was announced last March, I found very demoralizing. I think that council should directly communicate the desire of respondents to collaborate and cooperate with the province. I think that Department of Environment is abdicating their responsibility for coastal protection, and I don't think it's our responsibility to do it, and yet we're being held up as a shining example of taking on coastal protection when it's not our responsibility. Thank you.
Further questions, comments? So again, this What We Heard report will be part of the basis for drafting regulations, mm-hmm. along with other information that has been received. No further questions? That concludes our agenda then for this morning. Would someone move the meeting be adjourned? Moved by Councillor Wynot, seconded by Councillor DeLong. All those in favor? Councillor Moore?
Yes.
Councillor Greek?
Yes.
Motion is carried unanimously.